Hey, so we just had the 59th anniversary of the assassination of John F. Kennedy. Next year is going to be a big deal. I mean, it's always a big deal. And those of you old enough to remember probably remember where you were when you found out. But next year is the 60th anniversary. Hey, imagine in the days after the assassination, they bring in the suspect and you're sitting there watching TV and they bring in Lee Harvey Oswald. And you're like, wait a second. I know this guy. It happened to our next guest. His name is Paul Gregory. He's written a new book. Fascinating. I actually downloaded it just now, and I have the hard copy as well. The book is called The Oswalds, An Untold Account of Marina and Lee. Available wherever books are sold. It's written by Paul Gregory. Professor Gregory, welcome to WABC. Thank you, sir.
Good to be here.
So, November 22nd, 1963, Kennedy shot. You're watching the news. Within a day or so, they show Oswald. What was your reaction? And how? And you knew him beforehand. Just tell us a story. How did you get to know this guy?
Well, there are two questions. One is, where was I? The other is, how did I get to know? With respect to the where was I, it was not days later. It was around 4 p.m., the day of the assassination, that the reporters said they're bringing in a suspect. And here he comes, and there I see my friend, Lee Harvey Oswald, in a white T-shirt, bruised face. As you can imagine, that was quite a shock. I was sitting with other students in front of the TV at the time. So I think I said, yes, I know that guy, but no one paid attention to me. In terms of how I got to know them, my father is Russian. He left Russia at the age of around 20 and became a petroleum engineer. But as a hobby, he taught Russian in the local library. So he would be the only one in Fort Worth noted for knowing Russian. So when Lee and Marina came back to the States, to our common hometown, Fort Worth, Lee went to my father to get a certificate saying that he was proficient in Russian. If there was any employment in this area, they should think of Lee. So that's how it all got started.
Hey, by the way, I actually read once he wasn't that good in Russian. He never really mastered it. What did your dad say about his ability to speak Russian? Was it all there, or did he have a lot of work to do?
I would focus this question on my experience with Lee, because he and I and Marina spoke Russian during our time together.
Okay.
So we were together around 1.5 months, and I would go over to their house a couple of times a week, and we would speak Russian. I would take them to buy groceries, sightseeing, etc. So I had a good fix on his Russian.
So how was it, sir? How was it, Professor? Was he good?
He could express himself well. He knew all the words for various foods, mechanical things and like that. So as a result of submersion in the language for 3 years, he could express himself fluently in Russian, but with terrible grammar. So he never mastered grammar. There are these conspiracy theories that he was sent to some KGB training camp when he spent his 3 years in Russia. If that were the case, I would think the KGB would have taught him some grammar. But he spoke, and he spoke fluently, and I was a good judge because that's all we spoke.
All right, so listen, I understand the part about your dad. He's the guy, you know, the certificate. But how did you end up hanging around him? I mean, how did that start?
Well, it started the same way. Lee came into my father's office and got the certificate that he was fluent. And Lee said, we're staying with my brother, Robert. And here's a telephone number. So if you'd like to meet my wife, who's Russian, give us a call. My father did so. So he and I went together and met Lee and Marina at Robert Oswald's house, and that's how the relationship began.
All right. And by the way, I got to mention as an observation, it is interesting to hear you call him Lee. You know what I mean? I mean, for I've only heard him referred to as Oswald, but you know him, you knew him, and Lee is, you know, you're calling him by the first name, and it's appropriate. It's just a little bit, you know, it's different in a way. And, of course, that's there in the book. All right, so...
Well, let me say that in writing the book, I had to confront this issue, and if it was something that was sort of personal, a personal relationship thing, I would use Lee. If it were Oswald did this and Oswald did that, then it would be Oswald.
All right. So you get to know this guy a little bit. What's he like?
That's a question I hate to get because it requires a very long answer.
Well, I mean, just give me the gist of it. Pretend we're on an elevator.
It was a loner and a loser. That's what comes to mind first. He had illusions or delusions of grandeur. He thought that he was going to return to the United States. He'd had 3 years of experience behind the Iron Curtain. He had written what he called his historic diary, and that was one reason for coming in to my father, sort of to get started on a publishing contract for his historic diary. So he thought he would be something of a celebrity in the U.S. And when he and Marina landed at Dallas Love Field, his first question is, where are the reporters?
Yeah.
And there weren't any. So this was someone who felt that he had gotten sort of a bad shake in his
sure.
life. He was owed something. He was an important figure. He should go down in history, by the way. And this was what his mother had taught him. So,
oh, Marguerite. Now she's a total. She was a total psycho, my understanding. Look, I want to. We'll get back
sure.
to that in a moment, if you don't mind, though. So you see this guy on TV. You know him, and I guess the FBI, Secret Service. You know, they want to talk to you. They talk to your dad. That must have been a very strange feeling. And I wonder if you ever felt any, not that you should have, but I can understand a certain natural, did you feel any guilt or what did you feel? That's just a weird thing to have been a friend, an associate of a presidential assassin. Number one, how did it feel? And number two, how did the authorities treat you? Did they treat you like a good guy or a bad guy?
Well, my answer to your second question is they treated me exceedingly well, very politely and respectfully. And remember, I was 21 at the time, so I was just a kid. They found me early the next morning when they came to my doorway, which was in Norman, Oklahoma, because I was a student there. I said, boy, you found me quickly. And I later learned in reading testimony that I was one of the few people who showed up on the radar at their term for me was as a known associate of Oswald.
Yeah, you see, that doesn't sound good. I mean, it doesn't even like it sounds.
No, it sounds like I did it.
Right?
Yeah.
It said negative connotation. So, all right, so we got that part. So how did you feel? How did you feel being labeled as such and just that had to be a very odd sensation?
I would say just I was in shock the whole time. So I would, if I were to pick one word, I would say shock. In terms of feeling of guilt, you know, I think I told myself there's just no way you can blame yourself for anything. Although I did a couple of things for Lee and Marina, which in retrospect one could have said if that had not happened, then this wouldn't have happened. Such as inviting them to meet the Dallas Russians. We were the Fort Worth Russians. And it was that meeting that caused Lee and Marina to move to Dallas and so on. So one can say, well, if the Gregorys had not existed, there would have been no assassination. But you could do this about 1,000 other things.
Sure. And Fort Worth, Kennedy was at Fort Worth. I mean, you're right. You can't blame yourself, obviously. But it's interesting. It's so interesting. All right. So let me just, you spent some time with him and you said he was, you know, kind of had a chip on his shoulder and, thought he was all this and, he was a loser, but you hung out with him multiple times. Why did you, why would you spend, you know, it's, and it's your option. It's a free country. Why would you, what were you getting out of being around them?
Well, you have to think back to the Cold War. A person, male or female, newly arrived from the Soviet Union would have been a real oddity, a rarity. And so I, as a college student, someone who knew Russian and wanted to improve Russian, regarded this as a chance to speak regularly with someone who was fresh from the Soviet Union and who could tell me about life in the Soviet Union, which was basically a blackout at that time. So the idea was not for me to go over and speak with Lee. The idea was for me to go over and speak with Marina, which I did, I think, 2-3 times a week. But Lee was always present there, too. And so quite often, or most of the time, he would enter into the conversation, too.
Mm. Hey,
so
this
it
is,
was Marina I, that was the attraction, and definitely not Lee.
Let's talk about Marina for a moment. Marina, Lee Harvey Oswald's widow, my understanding is she's still alive, and she lives somewhere down there in the Dallas region. Is that true?
It's true. I can't remember the name of it. It's a small town, so it's sort of a farming community. I think that community has pretty much protected her from probing eyes. I have not talked to her since the assassination. I talked to her husband, her second husband, and his job in life is to protect her. So he pretty much does not allow others to speak with Marina almost 60 years after the fact.
All right. So let me get your thoughts, if you don't mind, and I'm curious if they are in the book. I mean, who do you think killed Kennedy? You know, a lot of people don't think it was Oswald by himself. I personally do, by the way. But where do you come on that? Where do you come down on that question?
Well, that was obviously the first question. The Secret Service, when they picked me up on the day after the assassination, wanted to know. I was in a police car driving to Oklahoma City, where they had an office, and I was hearing the radio reports coming in, which more or less confirmed that Oswald had done it. You know, they're saying, yeah, we got the rifle. Yes, it is the assassination weapon and so forth. So they were asking me, you know, what do you think? And I said then, and I still believe it now, that this guy could not have been a part of a conspiracy. He could not be a follower, and he could not be a leader. He had the resources to do the assassination, so it wasn't a high-tech thing, I think. In order for him to prepare for the assassination, he needed like $200, and his wage was $125 an hour. And if you do the calculation, particularly for someone who loves to save money, he had the resources and he was a killer, because it's often forgotten that he barely missed assassinating the Dallas General Walker.
Hey, you mentioned his brother, Robert. You talked about him a moment ago. I actually spoke to his brother, I don't know, maybe 15 years ago on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought he was an incredibly gentle and nice person. And I thought, just forget about my phone call for a moment, but everything I know about how he handled this situation, it was as good as anyone could handle it. He handled it with dignity. He was just an all-around gentleman. It was one of the worst things that could ever happen to a family. But he withstood it, and he did it with dignity. That's my take on Robert Oswald. You have any thoughts on that?
I share the result. I share your thoughts. He's one of the few very positive characters to come out of this tragic story. My father translated for Marina the 5 days after the assassination. So he and Robert were cooped up with Marina and kids and Secret Service for 5 days at the Six Flags Inn between Dallas and Fort Worth. And Robert comes across as the real hero and as someone who stood by his family no matter what. So it was up to Robert to prepare the funeral, which was not easy because no one wanted to have Oswald in their cemetery. So now Robert comes across as a real hero. Lee had a half brother. Yeah.
John Pick. Hey, listen, do me a favor.
Sure.
I got to take a quick break. Will you stick around? I got something I want to follow up with you.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. So the book, by the way, which I've got the hard copy, and I just bought the Kindle as well. I usually do that with books I like. The Oswalds, An Untold Account of Marina and Lee. If you are an assassination buff, as I am, and however you come down on the issue, I think this is an important book. The Oswalds, available wherever books are sold, by Paul R. Gregory. We'll be right back.
Greg Kelly on the Red Apple Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome back. We're on the phone with an author. He just wrote a new book, which I find very fascinating. I just got it. I'm making my way through it, enjoying it very much. It's called The Oswalds, An Untold Account of Marina and Lee, by Paul R. Kennedy. Professor Kennedy knew the Oswalds way back before the assassination, and he's now telling the story. Hey, by the way, Professor, thanks for sticking around. Why are you writing this book now? I'm glad you did, but why now? I mean, this is a long time ago, and you're writing about your interactions with the Oswalds before the assassination. Why do it now?
First of all, I led a very busy life after the assassination, and I didn't know whether I was capable of writing a full-length book at that point. I am now. It's become my profession. I would say two things. One is our family felt a sense of shame, and this relates to one of your earlier questions, that we had associated with this person who was a known communist, a Marine deserter, someone who defected to the Soviet Union. So our community and friends would have asked, well, you know, what were you doing with that person? You know, why were you associating? So during my parents' lifetime, I felt I was not able to write such a book. So it was a sense of shame that really prevented this from being told. The second factor is we know a lot more now than we did, let's say, 1964. And that is we have Oswald's KGB file. We have recent releases from CIA and FBI wiretaps. So there's more information now. But I would say it was a sense of shame and the fact that we did not want to share this story with the community.
Yeah, no, I understand. Well, we know nothing to be ashamed of course. And, Professor, this is an important contribution. By the way, a very successful professor. You got a master's in this, a PhD in that, Stanford, Harvard, you name it. Professor, I appreciate it. The book is called The Oswalds, An Untold Account of Marina and Lee. Many thanks for joining us.
I enjoyed the conversation.
All right, sir. All the best to you.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.